I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello everyone, you're all very welcome to the show. We had a jam-packed bank holiday weekend full of football, hurling, the whole shebang. And to review it all with me, I have my partner in crime, Lee Costlow. Lee, you're a madman, you ran a marathon at the weekend.
I did, yeah, I ran a marathon. I was doing it to raise awareness for the GAR podcast. There's poor souls out there who haven't subscribed yet, so, wow. You know, not all heroes wear capes.
Fair play to you, Lee. And we have a very special guest with us too. He's won it all, an All-Ireland club, a National League, a Sigerson Cup, and an All-Ireland final winning man of the match. It's the full collection. He's a dub, but he's been estranged in Monaghan for the last few years. So, Kevin Nolan, welcome to the show. How's
things? Thanks very much. Yeah, all's good. Yeah, thanks very much for having me up here. It's good to be back up here every once in a while.
Back into the big smoke, yeah. So you haven't got the Monaghan accent yet?
No, anytime I'm back down here, I have to try resort back to my old the Dublin accent, so just to fit in a bit more and make sure I don't lose the touches.
Okay, so but you're fully settled in down in Monaghan, got the lingo and probably the country music and all this.
Yeah,
kind of thing,
yeah,
down
big
there.
Time country. Just living outside Castleblaney in Club Cromartin. Loving the area, loving life up there. Football, school, everything sort of moved up, so really enjoying it now.
Great stuff, and I suppose the last we heard from you, you moved down to Monaghan, and I remember hearing at the time there were rumours that you might even get to play with Monaghan. Like, was it ever close to happening, or was it?
No, listen, injury played sort of ended my career with Dublin, back operation and all that. So trying to get back fit, playing with the Dubs, and just struggled to basically make the squad. So went back with the club then. And we looked to get a house, or looked to buy a house around Dublin, and two teachers, we struggled. So we looked into the option of moving up to Monaghan and travelling down to Dublin for a year, which worked fine. But again, it was a short-term solution to a long-term problem that we had. So we eventually just renovated and built the house up there. And it was travelling. I was actually training with Cromartin Club, but still trying to play with Kilmacud. So I was training with one team, but never playing with them. And I was playing with another team but never training with them.
Okay.
So at the time Crokes were training in Bray Emmett's and training maybe 8:45 at night. So by the time you were finished, it was about 10:15. So to drive back up to Monaghan, it was long enough. So didn't want to be doing that too long. And obviously with the back issue as well, it just came to a close that I had to either transfer or give it up. So I transferred and luckily got the chance to play with my wife's two brothers in the club, Cromartin. So yeah, in a club and in a county like Monaghan, they're mad into their football, and it just sort of came in and sort of immersed myself fully into it.
And you're still playing with the club?
Still playing with the club football, yeah, intermediate, which is it's a very competitive league, and I know maybe Throne men might have seen Monaghan clubs coming through at senior, intermediate and junior level, that the quality is there, it is good, it's intense, and Monaghan being Monaghan football, they're hard hitting. It's a physical game up there, but it's fully enjoyable.
Do you notice much difference between club football in Dublin and in Ulster? People always say Ulster full of the hard men and all, but have you noticed it?
I would have been, yeah. I probably carrying a few more pounds than I was when I was playing with Dublin, so that helped in the club games, all right. But listen, the quality is it's up there. When you're moving from a club like Kilmacud Crokes with the All Ireland aspirations to an intermediate club in Monaghan, the aspirations are still there to win championships. But there's maybe that competition for the title is there everywhere, junior, intermediate, and senior. So. Similarly, in Dublin, you have any team that could win. Dublin could go on and win an All-Ireland club. We're looking at intermediate level now, and any team that comes out of intermediate can challenge for Ulster club. So I think that's the aspirations of nearly every team that plays intermediate football. You could be in a league or a championship final like we were a number of years ago, and in the past two seasons, unfortunately, we've been in the bottom half and been in relegation playoffs, but luckily stayed up.
Sure, isn't that the thing? When whatever grade you're playing in, it's the most important thing in the world for you at that time to win that championship. So, as well as that, you've got involved in the coaching as well. So you've fully immersed yourself in Monaghan, Kevin.
Yeah. So studied up in Jordanstown for a year, met a few Monaghan men up there. Rory Begum was playing the Sigerson team. Ryan McInnesby, Kieran Hughes. So. Just obviously living up there and having the connection with Monaghan would have formed friendships with those players and other lads from Tyrone, Armagh, Down, and all that, lads that are fine footballers now, and you can see them on the county stage. But Rory Begum was involved in the development squad with an under-15s a number of years ago and asked me to get involved with him. So that worked out well. Unfortunately, COVID hit, so we weren't training as much anymore. We weren't training at all, really. Their team came through to minor last year. We didn't. We still wanted to play football ourselves, and Rory, being senior in the county footballer, couldn't commit to both, so he stepped away, and I wasn't going to be going forward at all in relation to management for them, for the minor team. Not that I would have had a crazy amount of experience, but Paul O'Connor, who's the manager in Monaghan coaching, asked me to get involved last year with the under-14s, so I'm managing the under-14s and now carry them through into under-15s. So we had a game there against Westmeath last week. End of May, we have a game in sort of a competitive blitz for them against Dublin. So we're welcoming Dublin up to Cloughan in a couple of weeks' time. So look forward to that.
Right, that'd be a great kind of all comes full circle, I suppose, at that stage. Yeah. Look, we'll definitely talk more about your career later on, Kevin, because there's so much to talk about from it. But first, we'll talk about the weekend's action. And I know you had a bit of skin in both games, I suppose, the Monaghan and the Dublin game. But we're going to start off with the Dublin game. And I suppose, to be honest, for me, looking in, the first place to start really is with Stephen Cluxton. To be honest, I was very surprised that he was starting. I thought it was kind of... And anyone who I talked to, it was people were kind of thinking, it's O'Hanlon's jersey to lose now. Were you surprised, Lee, when Cluxton was starting?
Yeah, I was surprised. I was surprised because I thought when he was introduced to the panel, they weren't going to throw him in straight away in the league final against Derry. But I thought up against Laois, a Division 4 team, with all respect, they were going to win. That would have been the time to introduce him rather than give O'Hanlon that game, and then in a semi-final against Kildare. Like, I know Kildare didn't have a great league, but on paper they're still Dublin's biggest threat in Leinster, you would have thought. So just changing things around, I know it's Cluxton, he's the best goalkeeper ever in history, but still, three games since he last played at that level and stuff, so to throw him in at that was a bit strange. Desi Farrell was saying after that he was only doing it to give him game time, so if anything happened to O'Hanlon, he'd have at least game experience. But it makes me think of the 20 years that Cluxton was number one, not too many other sub-goalkeepers got a championship game, for experience, just in case Cluxton got injured. So it's just a strange one. It's an unusual situation.
Were you surprised initially when Cluxton came back, Kevin?
Yeah, I think a lot of the former Dubs would have been as well, seeing him tug out. I think there was three keepers warming up that day. So to see him back, obviously the standards he would have set as a captain, but even before that as a player, the amount of dressing rooms he's been in for Dublin and played under many managers, and the experience he's been there, done that. So listen, he's like, they would have had very sort of an open door policy that whoever is available in Dublin, they're available for the squad. And again, McCaffrey being back in Mannion, it just adds to all that there's high aspirations this year to go on and win it.
It was a big surprise. I think it was against Loud that day when you see him in the warm up. Like, I know he hadn't officially retired. But did you, in your head, was he done at that stage anyway?
No, because, and I don't think he's the type of person that would have come out with these retirement statements, the iPhone notes app screenshots on the social media. never would have said it, and I think he would have always been that type of person that would, if he did walk away, it would have just gone into the sunset and that was it. But the fact that the door was always open there for him to come back, and listen, if he was in against Laois, obviously they weren't overly tested in that game. Against Kildare, a few high balls came in, dealt to them really well. Kickouts, yes, Kildare might have dropped off and he got a lot of kickouts off, but again, when he did have to go long, he hit one in under the Hogan stand, James McCarthy plucked it out of the sky. So, you know, he still has it in the repertoire there. And he, as I said, he's tried and tested. He knows what to do, and the standards he sets for everybody, it's gonna help the keepers that are there for years to come. It's also gonna help the other players to make sure that they're fully focused on what the aim is.
Well, just on that, because like you always hear Dublin players saying that Cluxton, what he brings, you know, even in the changing room, even if he wasn't playing, what he brings with leadership qualities and things like that. And obviously he doesn't talk to the media, so we never get to see that side of him. Is he a real talker in the changing room? And when you say he doesn't let standard drops, is he on people straight away? Like, what's his personality like in training?
Yeah, listen, he'd be a joker as well. And he would have been, obviously he's a teacher. He is maybe a bit reserved in relation to media and all that, which is perfectly, it's up to everybody and up to themselves. Everyone would be accountable. And if the defenders are meeting together, talk about kickouts or whatever it is, he'd be vocal and he'd be letting people know if they weren't doing their job, because again, I'm sure he would expect that for other people if he wasn't doing his job.
Mm. It was like a flashback to the 2011 All-Ireland final when he got his free and coming off the field, you could hear the big chants from the Dublin fans. I think they were all kind of thinking back at that moment. And then when he hit it wide, the Kildare lads were all gave big hey. So it was kind of, it was funny that way. But do you think, Lee mentioned Desi Farrell there saying it was kind of a game time thing. Who do you think was starting goals in the Leinster final against Louth?
I think the fact that he's in now, and I think he did the job well. It was just obviously the test, and Kildare put a massive test up to Dublin. I think up to the 51st minute, it was Kildare were in the lead and they were taking control of it. Dublin then they levelled it up and then sort of controlled the game after that. But I think Cluxton is, for me, he'd be number one for the next day.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned there, it was a tight game, and I think we were even saying the last day, Lee, that, you know, Dublin playing Derry in that league final, that could be their last tight game before we get to the All-Ireland group stages. So Desi, another interesting quote from Desi, said, "It definitely grounds players who may need grounding. And I'm not saying that they do, but it brings everything back to earth with a bang. And the reality is that that's the type of game you're going to encounter when you move on." So like it was one of those games, and maybe we didn't think it was coming, but like Dublin, there was stages where, you know, it was up in a bit of doubt.
Yeah, it's sort of the game you were expecting nearly last year when Kildare had a decent... I know they got relegated, but, you know, they'd beat Dublin in the league and stuff and they were showing real promising signs, and then they were very disappointing when they met in the championship. This time they were really disappointing in the league, and they seemed to muster up this performance, especially after the hammering that they gave Laois. We were sort of like, Dublin are really taking Leinster seriously here, you know, because the last few years they'd be winning games, but, you know, like not hammering teams, just winning nearly robotically. What it means, like, you got to give some credit to Kildare. You know, they've been under a lot of stick this whole season. Glenn Ryan's been under a lot of stick. They know that they have the players. We always say they got the players on paper. They did manage to step up and bring a performance, which is massive. And it was good to see, because you just want to see a competitive game. But it's nearly the worst thing that could have happened from a Louth's point of view, because I'm sure Mickey Hart's sort of thinking, if they had one bad game and then one off day, they've got it out of the way now. Do you know, like, he'd have loved to have met them that day maybe instead. So don't know, they're few and far between with Dublin. I can't see them being as slow or as sloppy next day out.
What sort of shape do you think Dublin are in general, Kevin? Like, I suppose hammer and Laois the last day and then tight in this one. Obviously had a decent league campaign. Well, obviously they won it, but maybe not brilliant to hold with. Like, where do you think they are in general?
Yeah, I just think the league campaign, and obviously talk about even about the likes of Kildare and Armagh having a great league, but look where they are now and where they are. They're all still in the competition they want to be in now at this stage with the draw made earlier on. Where Dublin are, listen, I think they're, and back to when I was playing myself, the in-house games were nearly just as important as the championship games that we were playing, because it was getting people up to the match intensity. Likewise, the Cluxton thing, if he's performing well in those training games, you know, that speaks volumes for itself. Yeah, they'd have been disappointed in the first half. I know Kildare brought a lot of hard work and intensity to it, and you could see the, you know, defenders and forwards getting the bodies back in to block up the 45. I remember hearing as well on the video, you could hear Kildare roaring out as if they were dropping too far into their 45, allowing maybe Dublin to, you know, get closer to the goal. Similarly, in the second half, when maybe Kildare were tiring, Dublin were able to control the game that bit more, and they were able to get the bodies forward into the scoring zone that bit more. And you could see even a few bad shots. Lee Gannon had a bad wide. Kieran Murphy had another wide, but he still they got scores themselves as well. But they got into positions in the second half that they weren't maybe in the first half. Basically, when they did start to control the game, you could really see that it was inevitable that it was going to happen, I felt. But where they are, yes, attacking wise, there's just a few options they have. The bench they had was strong. They'd obviously have to look at the next day with a free taker. Conor Callaghan would have stepped up in the first half, missed a free that Dean Rock would have put over with his eyes closed, or Cormac Costello. So, you know, they do have options there, and that would have been a big thing by bringing but the lads been available this year. It's had more competition for places.
Definitely, yeah. You mentioned the A versus B games there. I'd say they were kind of, back in your time anyway, when you were starting out, were they always kind of fierce clashes and everyone fighting to take your own jersey, really?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, look, listen, everyone was there. Everyone had a role. If you were on the B team, it was just you were making sure the A's were ready to go for championship football. And the lads would have prided themselves on that. I know Paul Casey, Mossy Quinn would have been on the mighty B's. But whenever they went out, they were going out to do a job on us to make sure that we were best prepared for championship football. And it stood to us. Years later then, those lads that would have been on the B team were not saying better quality, but there was more quality and more competition for places. So it just meant no one was able to relax or go into a bit of a comfort zone. Because if you were, there was a next man to step into your position, whether it be number one, number 15 or number 26. There was always competition for every single place. And I think, again, from back in my time when we were playing, those matches were high intense. There was game plans we were trying to play within those games that were you know, going to be used later on in the summer. And I still think that when they go out to the DCU to play these games, all these scenarios that they're going to come up against in championship football will be practiced in the training games.
Yeah, so there's no holding back in them, and there was no holding back. I don't know if you've seen Anthony Rainbow telling Darren Daly, did you see that? He said, I'm not a lip reader now, Ant, but from what I could see, it was go back to your effing side or go back to your effing box.
Yeah. He got really involved in the game, didn't he? Okay, I don't mind a bit of that. It's probably not a good thing. Like, if you're a Kildare player and you're seeing it, it's maybe not the best thing to look at your sideline.
You know, I think I'd fucking love to see that.
Do you? Your manager.
I'd like to see the manager getting involved and,
yeah.
Do you know that he's ready to go to war?
It depends on the situation. I don't know about against Dublin, though. You know, when everything's so, like, I just feel like it needs cool heads. That's what they need to beat Dublin, because they have brought it to them before, you know, and sort of show good performances in the past, but never, like, they had the game. Do you know, they had it in their hands, and it just does look like it sort of spilled out of control for them, and they mustered everything they could, and they ran out of steam when cool heads nearly would have been better rather than snatching shots late on and stuff, and they lost the game, and that may have been the difference. Not that it's his fault, I just mean it was like, that's a reflection on the players and the whole team, how they felt being, knowing that they're so close to something that would be so, so special. If they'd won that game, that's all we'd be talking about today, because it would have been a monstrous occasion. But they did let, you know, passion get the best of them. It wasn't cool heads, and it ultimately slipped out of their hands. So I don't know.
Yeah, I just think the emotion on it, by getting caught up in the whole thing, it was as well, it was at a time in Dublin where you know, they were twisting the knife in. Mm-hmm. They'd tailed back. There was a 4-point lead Kildare would have had. I think they dropped the ball short. Dublin went down and got a point, and then they got another point in a row. So it just, you know, they were tailing back that bit of a lead that Kildare had, and you could just see things were going against them. And again, I know on the sideline you've got managers maybe up and down the line or different things happening. You look at Rory Gallagher up with Derry, and he's going crazy, booked after 5 minutes. You know, could easily been sent off or stuff. But again, I think like that, players see it on the sideline, and it could give some players a massive boost and say, listen, he's fighting for us on the sideline, we have to do it on the pitch. It can work for some players, work for others. And again, if Kildare won it, you'd be thinking master stroke. But the fact that it was just a lot of those Kildare management were all there against the one Dublin man, and Darren Daly walks away, a bit of a grin on his face, and say, listen, whatever he's done, he's wound him up. And listen, it sort of just takes their eye off the ball. The management could be for a second or two, and it could be a decision that they didn't see. Mm-hmm. I know from chatting to a few people, and I know, you know, Jim Gavin would have been looking on the sideline very logically of, you know, what's happening and not getting caught up in the emotion of it. And again, maybe people didn't like that, but again, it had its role and it had its job in the game. So, you know, it works out for some, and maybe others, you may, you know, Banty, I'm looking at a Monaghan man. Yeah, he'll jump and he'd kick every ball over the bar for them. He's like that, but again, like maybe the decisions that need to be made, split decisions, because the emotion, and they're so into it, sometimes you might miss out on those little things.
So are you more of a Banty or Jim Gavin for the Monaghan under-15s now, Kevin?
Yeah, you're sort of, well, listen, you're trying to take from best from everybody, and you, without being a carbon copy of people, you're trying different things, but especially for young kids, you're just trying to get them, you know, to learn their trade. And, you know, you're looking at footballers now, maybe the roles aren't as defined as they used to be. It's, you know, you could be an amazing athlete with a decent skill set and be able to make a senior in the county footballer, whereby maybe a number of years ago you had your wing forwards did certain jobs, full forwards did a certain job. Now the fact that it's like a game of basketball, everyone's up and down and everyone's accountable. You're just trying to make sure every kid is aware and exposed to different things that can happen. And if you're able to help them on the sideline, brilliant. We obviously don't want to be roaring in the whole time, because if we're doing that, we're playing the game for them. If they have to think for themselves, they have to make the decisions at the end of the day. And I do think, again, back to Dublin, the last number of years, the teams that have fallen short, maybe the decision making when it really comes down to it, it sort of lacks. You know, you look at the likes of the Mayos and even Kildare the last day, you know, McCormick had two drop shorts in the second half. If they hold on to that ball that bit more when they are up, again, it sort of takes the sting out of Dublin's attack. And that's, again, we're trying to do that as best we can with the young kids that we have, to just expose them to as much as they can at a high level, so that they have to think for themselves.
So mix it the two, we'll say.
Yeah, listen, I played under many, many great managers. You try to take bits from everybody. Paddy Carr would have been a Kilmacud manager when we won the All-Ireland in 2009. Went in with Donegal and things didn't go well for him. But listen, there's things that he'd have done that we've been thinking, listen, that's the great characteristic to have as a manager. Pat Gilroy, Pillar Caffrey, Niall Moyne, different players, different managers I would have played under, that you're trying to take the best from everybody. And listen, just it's try it out, and if it doesn't work, you know, move on, but trial and error basically.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about Paddy Carr. It only popped into my head there as we were talking, but probably a bit off topic, but it was sad the way it ended up for him, and because he did seem like a real decent fella. Like, and remember the interview when they beat Kerry that day, and you were just delighted for him that day. But
yeah, the way it happened, listen, players not being available. I know Ryan McHugh, massive player, would have been up in Jordanstown as well, so came across him, lovely lad, not being available this year. Michael Murphy, like two massive players to play within any team in the country, let alone just the Donegal team, who were maybe in that period of transition. Strange thing was, obviously, the coaches and selectors stayed on. So whatever ins and outs happened, but again, my own experience of Paddy, great lad, great manager. You would have done everything for him, because you nearly felt if you didn't do it, you're letting him down. Whereby maybe other managers could have been, they'd be giving you a bit of a bollocking. But him himself would have been, you know, you're doing it for him, and you know, didn't want to disappoint him, basically, as I said.
Yeah, but he definitely did. He worked the Oracle with G anyway, winning that All-Ireland in 2009. We'll come back to that. But from there, we'll go on to Dublin's opponents. And it was probably the game of the weekend, Louth and Offaly. And Offaly were going well early on. Then Louth take over. Kieran Downey on fire with 7 points from play. And you're thinking, do you know, they're 4 points up with what was it? I think it was only 10 minutes to go. And you're thinking, do you know, this is curtains. But then Offaly should have won it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's credit to Offaly, just given the tragedy that they had to go through this season and the way that they've been able to galvanise themselves and like perform basically out of their skin every single game. And then you've got Louth, they're also on the crest of the wave. So they've got these two teams on the up, meeting each other at similar levels, and it makes for a great game of football. And, you know, it's not something we could have always said about Leinster football. And like, I'm almost jealous as an Ulster man for a change, watching as, like, you know, the games in Leinster were almost better. Talking about Louth, I mean, you know, when Mickey Hart took over Louth in Division 4, you could see his whole plan was, we've got a real footballer here in Sam Mulroy. Build a systematic, you know, sort of tactic where everyone has their role. It's all very defined and we can be well structured at the back, and then this man gets you the scores. But now footballers are starting to appear and pop up like Downey and stuff, and the load's being shared as they climb through the leagues and they get more confident. They're playing in Croke Park a lot more often, you know, experiencing these big days. And That'll really stand to them coming up against, you know, because that could really crack your confidence. They showed the opposite side of it. Was it Westmeath? They came back against.
They came back, yeah. They were
Seven or eight down at half time. They showed that side, you know, where they were the underdogs and they really had to fight back and they get over the line. This time they let a lead slip, which can be really mentally draining and disheartening. But, you know, they recomposed it extra time. And I thought Sam Mulroy was brilliant. He could sort of shut down throughout the whole game. He's maybe trying to catch up to championship pace because he's only coming back from injury. So it'll actually be put him in good stead because he was excellent then. I think he kicked four or five from play in the extra time, you know, and really found his feet. And with forwards especially, like, it just sort of takes a breakthrough like that, and then the floodgates kind of open and he'll be fantastic the rest of the season. So I think it'll put Louth in good stead, and Offaly will be in great shape going into Tailteann Cup.
Yeah, but Mickey Hart was asked about it after game by Sam Mulroy, and he said, well, would you take Messi off? So he was the man. But it was a brilliant game, Kevin. I'd say, like, I was thinking, you know, when they got that run, they had two chances then to finish the game off. I'm not sure if you've seen it.
Yes,
Keane Farrell hit one, and was probably, there might have been a chance to go a bit further, and Jack Bryant missed the mark. So when it went to extra time then, the way Louth, and when it's Mickey Hart and they've been kind of going well, I nearly expected Louth to come on top then.
Yeah, and listen, looking at them from the league, their league performance as well would have carried into the championship games, and the belief, and, you know, how well they got on in the competition in Leinster's. You know, it's great to see those competitive games. It just sort of, you could see when they got back in, and the selectors and all, and the coaches that Louth put together, Mickey Hart's put together phenomenally. Their experience, whatever they say, the lads will literally hang on every word that they say. So I think that has been a massive influence and impact for them.
Yeah, like, they've a lot of lads stepping up, as you mentioned, Lee. It's not, like, last year it was kind of the Sam Mulroy show, but Conor Earley has been phenomenal in midfield, serious engine. Craig Lennon came on, and I was very impressed with the speed of him. He showed for one point, just burned a lad on the outside. And do you know, there's lads, Tommy Dernan in midfield was probably the man of the match the other day. Just,
yeah.
I'm not sure if you ever come up against him, Kevin, but he's a phenomenal player. You're shaking your head there in his time. But do you know, Loud, listen, they'll obviously be up against Dublin, but they're definitely a team, Lee, who's making great strides. And, like, Mickey, it doesn't show, I suppose, the impact that a good manager can have on a county, because, like, even driving through, I was driving through Dublin when that match, the amount of Louth people around the place, the whole county are behind him.
Yeah, he's been able to get everyone to buy in, and not just the players, but, like, the coaches, the fans, just everyone, that something here is special is happening in Louth that's special. You talk about good management. Like, I think it really shows what an incredible manager he is, one of the best ever. Because what he did with Tyrone's, obviously fantastic, the three All-Irelands, the county's first ever All-Ireland. And then every single year, his goal, you know, was win Ulster, compete in All-Irelands, you know, for nearly 20 years. And then to go to Louth, and the goalposts changed so dramatically. You know, suddenly your top target is get out of Division 4. Mm. But that's the top target, and he did it. Top target's in, out of Division 3, now into Division 2. Now it's, let's be competitive in the Leinster Championship, which was a dead duck of a championship for so long. And he's got them to the stage where they genuinely are that. The thing about Mickey Hart, and especially Dublin, coming up against Dublin, is that people have this impression that he's, like, so rigid and structured, and nearly too much so, and he won't ever change things, but he loves to actually throw in, you know, something wild and be a bit mad sometimes, like a crazy scientist kind of thing. Like what Kyle Coney was telling us about Ronan McNamee, he just, you know, gives the kid his championship debut against Kerry. You're marking Paul Galvin completely out of the blue. No one knew it until, like, minutes before throwing. The 2008 All-Ireland final, you know, Stephen O'Neill comes back in, he's retired, and he brings him in for the final. He hadn't played all year. Do you know, like, crazy things like that. And I'd say he has something up his sleeve for Dublin, something different. I'm not saying it'll work, but, like, it'll be something, it'll definitely be a Leinster final worth watching, and we couldn't always have said that.
Yeah, well, it's a bit of a free hit, I suppose, as well, when they're there. On to the Monaghan-Derry game. Kevin, as an adopted Monaghan man, small bit disappointed, I suppose, just with the way it went at the weekend.
Yeah, I think the first half was similar enough to the way that the Monaghan-Tyrone game, the way that was sort of starting off, and it's slow to start, and I just felt that right from the very start Derry were controlling that game, and Monaghan sort of played into their hands throughout the whole pitch. You know, Monaghan's key players, you know, talks to McManus and McCarron and McCarthy and all that. McCarthy after having a brilliant game in the second half against Tyrone, you know, they were in positions where they had to defend, and maybe they're not natural to doing so, and Derry really went at that. Just the way they positioned themselves, they set up, it's just phenomenal. And, you know, as a young aspiring coach, you'd love to see the types of training sessions that Gallagher puts Derry through. Being across, literally I live a minute from Clohan, where the county grounds are, so there's times I'd go over and just pop the head in, just have a look and see what the sessions are like. Even would have done it over the last number of years for a couple of training sessions, just to see what has been done to to get little nuggets. But again, Vinny coming in this year, again, they're going through that bit of that transition period, as I mentioned earlier on, about Donegal. But, you know, things would have worked well at times during the league that maybe they weren't following through, maybe the last day against Derry. They have some fabulous footballers, Carlo Connell coming through at pace. I think that was a big thing that if they were playing them again, they could try to exploit. Just not enough of them did it, you know. But you know, the high ball in as well, different players that they have in the squad that can cause issues. But overall, they would have been disappointed at the fact that they got no handle on the game at all. You know, and just the fact that they kicked 210, but to concede 121 in a game of football, especially 112 in the first half of football, is disappointing. Yeah,
that was the thing, wasn't it? You were waiting. And Carl O'Connell, he was the man that grabbed the bull by the horns, and he did a bit last week as well. Like he's a real kind of Rolls Royce for player, but it was definitely, it showed up a little bit of a weakness, I'd say, in Derry. Is like, I suppose any team when they're faced against complete raw pace is what he has.
Yes, yeah.
You wouldn't think he's 34 or 35 when you're looking at him playing, but I think you were just waiting on maybe, like, you know, with Conor McCarthy, as you said, he stepped up the last day, maybe waiting on McCarron, McManus. And yeah, I suppose that was it, wasn't it? Derry had kind of seemed to have targeted them, dragging them down the other end of the field, and that was nearly the trouble for Monaghan.
Yeah, like kickouts could have been got off from Derry, and it's as if everybody just moved up the pitch. They were soloing maybe at about three-quarter pace, waiting for everybody to get up. And once they got into the Monaghan half, it was literally just, let's try find a few pockets and let's try identify. If we move the ball to the right, we can quickly get it back left. And you could see the goal that Derry got, just Monaghan had players back, just not doing filling the space that needed to be filled. McCluskey went by McManus, yes, and there was Killian Lavelle, it's just on the inside, and he nearly just reacts to it too late, whereby those little pockets of space that the Derry players want to get into, you know, Monaghan players should have been filling them that bit better. And again, it just shows, you know, Gallagher has done this, he has his team ready to go, and offensively, what are they going to do? Great thing, I know Pep Guardiola talks about moving the ball to move the opposition, and Derry did that really well. They moved the ball, they carried the ball at pace, or they moved the ball quickly through the hands, and they get the defender shifted around until they find some, either a dummy or a weak link, and, you know, they take them on. Their evasion skills were brilliant, you know. They back the man to go one-on-one, they drop the shoulder, they go around him at pace, and then they either have one or two lads coming off the shoulder to either clip the few scores like Cassidy got in the first half, or Glass or Doherty got. So, you know, they've really added to the defensive setup that they would have had last year, similar to the way Donegal would have set up maybe 11 and 12, that they made sure that the defence was blocked up. And then, as I said, to score 121 in a game of football is phenomenal going.
Yeah, they kind of have it both ways. Now, Kevin, just talking about Rory Gallagher there, like, do you think he's that detailed that he would have targeted, you know, if you, whether it's McCluskey or whoever, that you find McManus and you go at him, like, because he left him for dead for that goal, and look, it's not what McManus wants to do.
No, it's so disrespectful too. You see McManus and you think, oh, this is handy. Do you know what I mean? Like, one of the best players in the history of the game, and that's what was going through his head. But that's the ruthlessness of this Derry team as well. Rory Gallagher, setting up against Derry, you nearly don't know what to do right, to do wrong, because last year they kept Jack McCarron and they kept Conor McManus up, and then they were completely overloaded on the other side of the field and they got slaughtered for it. And then everyone was saying this time, you got to mirror Derry. You know, you got to get everyone behind the ball when they're coming forward and try to get the turnover, get them on the counter. When, you know, Oran Lynch never hang up on the field. It looks like such an obvious weakness, but hasn't been hugely exploited. I know the Damien Comer thing in Galway, but like, that's one game out of how many? So, you know, what do you do really to do right? When you say, did Rory Gallagher say, I just think Derry's got really clever footballers. Yes. You know, really, really smart guys, all play at a very high level. Derry football is incredibly competitive, especially at senior level. Conor McCluskey, young fella, plays for Marfelt, won a championship in 2019. It was their first in years. Obviously, you've got all the Slack Neil boys and then the Glen boys, you know, that are coming through. And I mentioned earlier about the ruthlessness of this Derry team. On commentary, when they conceded the second goal, which was a sloppy goal, it was a high ball and it worked its way into the net. They were saying, oh, Derry are so clever here, they're just going to hold on to the ball, you know, and take the sting out of it. But they didn't. Like, Conor Glass then lifted it and just shot from distance and took it over. Do you know, what seems like the obvious and smart thing, you know, if you're just talking basically about football, isn't necessarily what they do. You know, they want to, what's the best way to react as quickly as possible and as ruthlessly as possible? And that does come from drilling and conversation after conversation. I'd say Gallagher has the ears talked off them, but them boys know what they're doing.
Is it something, you've obviously been in a lot of dressing rooms, Kevin, like the top managers, whether it's Pat Gilroy or Jim Gavin, like would it focus on such fine details like that, that you could like focus on whether it's, you know, you find yourself in a matchup with him? Is it that detailed?
I think the game's, it's evolved that way, yes. The fact that, you know, you're looking at all those small little percentages that will add to it. And again, from listening to the way Gallagher would speak, that's, he sort of goes at that fine detail compared to maybe when he was involved in setups before. Even, you know, teams that would have won All-Irelands that under himself and McGuinness. But yeah, it's trying to get your best players in positions that they can exploit the you know, the weaknesses of the opposition. And listen, McManus is still an extremely strong tackler. Awesome, you know, double players when we would have played against him before. You know, he's strong in the tackle. He's able to make those tackles, but it's putting him into positions on the field that he's not as comfortable with. So, you know, by bringing those players back, you're taking him out of his stronghold in the full forward line to a position where he's not as comfortable or not as used to and experienced to, even though he would have started off as a wing back. You know, he made his name as an amazing sharpshooter, full forward, corner forward. So to move those players around, and even just to mess with the opposition defence, I know they would have talked about sweepers back in front of defenders, but even by Monaghan having a sweeper back there, by all the Derry players pushing up fully, yeah, it meant that someone had to be accountable for everybody. And Oran Lynch as well, coming up kicking points from play. You know, you wouldn't have seen it 5 years ago. Now you've goalkeepers coming up, and you know, they look like the point guards nearly in basketball, that they're taking control of the game and they can dictate it. Ethan Rafferty doing it with Armad last number of years. So, you know, it's all those fine details on the field as well as off the field that managers and coaches really have to and have been paying detail to.
Yeah, it's just, you were saying there about like Conor McManus is obviously a brilliant tackler, and there's no doubt about it. I'd say actually all the top forwards in the game are brilliant tacklers. There's sort of a difference in tracking your man and trying to strip the ball off them nearly high up in the pitch, or going as far as you can with it, and actually being in a defensive position and having that awareness of what the right decision is to make, you know, when to stick and when to go and when to twist. Is that the difference?
Yeah, well, I know we mentioned McManus. McCarthy was also back there. He was covering Cassidy on the end line. And listen, if it was a defender, he'd have said, listen, I'll tuck in, stop the goal threat. And if he wants to pop the ball back out to Cassidy for a point, grand. But McCarthy actually stayed wide, making sure that Cassidy didn't get the slip pass. McCluskey went around, McManus and scored the goal there. But I think if you have two defenders there, they're more used to that maybe
instincts,
that defensive instincts, exactly. Yeah.
From a Monaghan perspective, like you can't be too down about the whole thing. Like, they did a great escape in the league, and then to beat Tyrone that day. And I'm sure you've seen it from your 5 or 6 years down there now, Kevin. Like, there's a great kind of spirit in the county, and you seem to have kind of grasped it yourself.
Yeah, listen, it was sort of either sink or swim. I said I'd get involved fully. And, you know, football's a religion up there. You know, it's all the schools, football, everything, the clubs. It's a real community aspect that maybe I wouldn't have fully experienced when I was playing in Dublin with Kilmacud Crokes. Just the fact that the size of the club itself, compared to Carmarthen up in Monaghan, there's maybe 300 members in our squad, in our club, compared to maybe 3,500 members in Kilmacud. Everyone knows everybody. You know, something that happens on a Saturday or Sunday, people are still talking about it the following week. And in school then, you know, these country schools, when you have maybe 7, 8 or 9 clubs represented in the school, that bit of crack as well sort of lends to it. Things that go well at the weekend, grand, it's all talked about. And, you know, to be staff members that I teach with, you'd be going into school the next day after maybe a good or a bad performance, looking to knife people and, you know, put the knife in the back and slate them. But listen, they're mad at their football, everything about them. They're driven, they're hard hitting. You know, when their backs are against the wall, they come out fighting. And I still think, you know, there's a lot of football still to be played in the Monaghan senior football team this year in the All-Ireland series. The draw was made earlier on. I think they look at it thinking, listen, there's a few games there that they could definitely go after. And I think they'll have the belief the couple of weeks then to get trained up and get practiced, to get working on certain things will help. You learn a lot from a defeat. I know the Derry defeat it's a hard one, but Derry are a phenomenal team. What they've gone through the last number of years to really build on it. Monaghan are a bit behind them, but they could still learn a lot from that performance, as well as maybe some of the league games they would have played.
Yeah, sure. It's Donegal, Kerry or Clare. Don't quote me on this now, and it could be on the dressing room wall in Clare, but you'd imagine Clare. And the other one is the Ulster,
Derry
or Armagh. Yeah. So, they're definitely, like, Monaghan wouldn't be too disappointed about that draw. Just mentioning Armagh, we'll talk briefly about their game. It was probably more one-sided than we would have anticipated, Lee.
The Armagh, I suppose they'd be really disappointed, just because they got such a big win over Donegal, and Conor Laverty would have really convinced them fellas that, you know, they're going out to make something special here and cause a real upset yet again. And Armagh did win fairly convincingly. Now, you know, it wasn't the best game of football to watch, but the conditions were genuinely awful. Like, it looked so bad. Armagh's goals came from a lot of points that sort of dropped short, but still, nearly accidentally brought out the best in Armagh because they're so brilliant under that high ball.
Yes.
Andrew Murnan, his goal, you know, like
he's unbelievable under the high ball.
And the way he can read it too, because it wasn't square ball, you know, he made sure he was outside the box, and then he timed it unbelievably. And I'm just thinking, with that weather and the rain, and when the ball's that high, you know, and the hang time on it, like, it's so hard to read that and get it just right. But he's fantastic at it. And Rian O'Neill got his goal. Did you see his celebration?
His celebration and eyes he gave the goal. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Coming
yeah,
in though.
Yeah.
He's like this, I'm going to fist this across.
It was so funny because he was so cool doing it. And then so, like, over the top of the celebration, you know, you're nearly the other way about. I wonder what that was about though, because he wouldn't normally be like that. And the game was already won. Do you know, at that stage, that was the fourth goal. I'm just wondering, like, maybe he's been frustrated, you know, because he'd been injured recently. You know, Armagh got relegated, and he seems to take a lot of the flack, doesn't he? Like, you just point to him because he's the main man. I wonder if that was like a real release for him.
Probably knew it was curtains for down, you know, completely at that. So just what Lee mentioned there about the high balls coming in. And we've seen a lot of goals coming from that this year, whether it's the miss-hit point shot, like Rian O'Neill's one was just the biggest carry on you could nearly see. Yeah. Like, but as a defender, is it something you don't like to face?
I think if you look at football maybe 10, 12, 15 years ago, teams maybe, not that you would have practiced it, but you would have had bigger men in on the square. Donaghy, you know, balls are played in, so the full back line are prepared for it and getting the fist on and getting the breaking ball. I don't think teams are practicing that as much anymore. Maybe because obviously the running games are played a bit more, and maybe coaches are trying to play the perfect style of football. But that usually we see these goals going in last 10 minutes of a game when there's nothing else to lose, lump a few high balls in, and between keepers and full back lines not fully aware of what's going to happen. Again, just creating a bit of mayhem, a bit of chaos in there. And I know even from watching Monaghan played down in the under 20 or 20 championship there recently enough, last 10 minutes, Monaghan got four goal chances from long balls in. And again, I know I'm playing football at the minute with Martin in the full forward line. So I've gone a long distance from where I maybe used to. But at times, listen, if the ball does come in, you're going to compete for it. And all it takes is maybe one out of three or four balls to fall your way or another player's way who gets the break and you could get a goal from it. So I think if teams maybe, and I know maybe the next day Armagh have those players in the full forward line, that could cause a serious threat to Derry. I don't know, will they try it some from the start just to really, you know, get them clued in? And it is interesting, you have Murnaghan there, you have Rian O'Neill, lads that are well able to take their mark, or again, as I said, break it and get something from it. Yeah, I just think you look at a lot of players now, the full-back line, they're nearly as good as a corner forward in football now, but are they used to the old style of football when the ball is played in long? Managers maybe don't want to be seen as they're still stuck in the old style of football, but it's something that, you know, it's very effective when it is used and it's used properly. And if teams do maybe practice it a bit more, you know, there's no reason why they couldn't use it earlier on in the game instead of leaving it till the last minute.
Especially because sweepers aren't as common. Or, you know, you're playing with two or three sweepers, so defenders would have been just so confident. There's a man behind you or even in front of you just to get that breaking ball. A lot of them, like, you know, for Fermanagh against Derry, they went man to man. You know, that's become a little more common. So then the advantage of the high ball sort of coming back into play.
Is that the Carmarthen tactic this year? Get the high ball in?
No, well, listen,
there in the square.
There's a few savage football. It's just another option that you try out. Again, try to running game. If it's not working, or even if it is working, just keep teams honest. And, you know, been involved in development squads, we're trying to create width in the team like every other team does, and depth by keeping people up high up the field, because if they don't, again, like the way Derry would have done it to Monaghan, all the Monaghan players are in positions now that they're maybe not as used to. If they have that confidence and they're able to keep the players up the field, they're keeping the Derry players honest and keeping someone marking them, because if there is a quick turnover and there's a long ball in, like what happened last year for Galway against Derry, you know, there's goal chances straight away and one or two of them goes in and it quickly changes up the style of the opposition team.
Yeah, it's a tough place to be though as a cornerback under like one of them miss hit points as well, isn't it?
It is, especially if the ball's falling. It can be hard for the full forward, but again, maybe being in there, they're just trying to make sure that the full back or the keeper doesn't make a clean catch, that if the ball breaks, there's a chance that another forward comes in to clean up the break and a goal chance is on. Yeah, they're not really sort of floated balls in as much as the goals that we have seen. They're sort of high balls. Maybe, I know, Gary Moans for Monaghan would have been just a boot. A boot fell in an area that caused a bit of chaos. And it's like that. Listen, if it goes over the bar, brilliant, great score. If it drops short, it's still in play and we can get something from it. Yeah, but and on the point of, you know, sweepers are back there, and would have been involved with O'Neill Shamrock ladies team up in Monaghan there the last number of years. Wife and sister-in-law would have been playing on the team. So again, I'd be a believer if the defenders are keeping you out around the 45 and you have maybe a target player or two that could play in the full forward line, if you can't run through them, why not try kick it over them? And again, like that, if you're on the same wavelength, that if you know a ball is coming in and the ball is broken, listen, chances could be created. It's not going to work every single time, but the one that it does, you know, it could get a goal off it, that could be a game changer.
Definitely. Sure. You managed a team with your wife and sister?
Yes.
It?
Yeah. Yeah.
How did that go?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, any little fights in the house, I just made sure they did an extra few mass runs. But no, it was. Listen, been involved in ladies football in the school as well, in our ladies in Castleblaney, phenomenal. You tell a girl what to do on the football pitch, she will do it. If you lose, she'll point a finger. Listen, you told us what to do, we did it to the letter of the law. Whereby sometimes with the lads and the maybe even that bit older men, they might think, listen, I know what to do here, and they take it upon themselves. Yeah, yeah. Whereby with ladies football, you know, phenomenal bunch of girls. They've given it their all. We've just come up against teams that are, you know, a Dunamoyne team that have won, I think it's 20 or 21 in a row. They've won a few All-Irelands as well. So they're in positions where we're trying to create a bit of an atmosphere and a culture that they were, you know, competing against the highest at the highest level.
Definitely. Just before we let you go, Kevin, is a quick fire round we do with all our guests. Now, this one mightn't be too quick because there's a lot to talk about with your career. But starting off, as a young lad, you had trials with Leicester and Blackburn, I believe. How close was it?
Soccer would have been first sport I would have played. Would have played with St. Joseph's Boys, would have played originally with a Carrigleigh football team, went to Joey's. Was dropped to the second team. So again, I know I'm getting off a little bit pointed, resilience word, and I'd be sort of keen to sort of try to develop it as much as possible with the development squads. I deal with that. Things don't go your way sometimes. Things that you don't have control over, you just have to literally get on with it. Would have been dropped to the second team with St. Joseph's Boys. Captained that team. We had a good season, came second in the league by a point. Manager for the first team asked me back up. I said no, and I stayed at the second team for another year. So building on maybe the communication skills on the field and maybe off it, leadership skills, things like that, and building on the resilience that when things don't go your way, just, you know, maybe work that bit harder. So it would have been brought back up. I think it was under 15s, and then the following year was over with Leicester on the trial.
Definitely move fast then from going to the second
team.
Must have had a great year.
In the DDSL football, there's a lot of scouts around and they do talk. And Alan Judge would have been on the team as well. He would have gone over to sign with Blackburn. Would have been the Irish Messi until he broke his leg a number of years ago. Would have been making the Irish team for the Euros. We'd have gone over together to Leicester and Blackburn. It moved well. It just, unfortunately, the second trial with Leicester coincided with a Leinster League match with Dublin. John Horan was the manager of the minor squad, and listen, he left it up to me to make the decision if I wanted to play centre back on the Dublin team against Meath or go over to the second try with Leicester. So I decided to stick with Dublin, and that was that.
What position did you play soccer?
I was centre half. Okay. Yeah, so big United fan. So Rio Ferdinand Vidic, I would have been the Vidic of it, just the no nonsense, maybe throw the mallet of a head at a ball and get rid of it. More so than the ball playing centre half. But listen, would have really enjoyed the soccer. Still do love it. Never really played it after that because I was so invested in Gaelic football at club, college and county. So it's probably one of the regrets and the only regret I have that I didn't actually give it a full chance. But the way Gaelic football has worked out for me, I can't really have any complaints.
Yeah, from there on, like it went very fast. Your Gaelic football career from maybe coming into the panel was 2008 or 2009, winning the Leinster title, going on to win an All-Ireland club, and then on to 2011, winning the All-Ireland and man the match in the final. Like, it was, you were only, like, it's hard to believe you were only, what, 2019, 2020, 2021, 2022. So it was an amazing time for a lad so young then.
Yeah, worked out, like, Pillar Caffrey gave me my debut in 2008, Leinster final against Wexford, Man Mark and Red Barry, was taken off after 20 minutes. It was yellow carded after 7. The experience of Red Barry was just phenomenal. He didn't even have a ball. He ran across me. My knee clipped his heel. He went down. Referee looked over and said, "Listen, you've already been booked. Another tick." So I think looking to the sideline straight away. I think Paul Casey came on for me. But from then I thought, listen, obviously a big weakness was that bit of experience, and how do I put that into practice? And you know, I tried to hone in the defending skills. you know, tackle with the near hand, need to keep the opposite arm up in the air to show a referee, listen, I'm not fouling with this hand. And would have tried to, you know, pride myself on the bit of tackling that I would have tried to focus on as a weakness back then. After that then, yeah, between going to college and DCU and Sigerson medals and things like that with DCU and Kilmacud Crokes and Dublin, it sort of all happened in the space of three year window. Someone said to me recently enough, was sort of, you know, quality not quantity in relation to the time I've spent playing Gaelic football at a high level. So listen, different things happen out of my control between a back operation and unfortunately being diagnosed with type 1 diabetes 2 months after winning All-Ireland would have been a big low point, but it's if I had the technology now that I had back then, I think it would have been a bit better managed and controlled.
Okay, so yeah, because we only watched the point this morning. I'd say you'll never tire watching that, really, the one in the 2011 final. But yeah, from that high, I suppose, to the low, like, was it something that you had known that there was something off for a while, or how did it come about?
So winning the All-Ireland was September, started the job. My first teaching job would have been the end of August, start of September. So just would have been tired, and listen, I never drank, never smoked, so we were celebrating a bit, but not as much as maybe some other lads, because obviously I had the first teaching job. Would have just felt maybe a bit off. I left for 2.5 weeks. I was constantly waking up during the night, maybe every hour, going to the toilet, peeing out nearly pure water at that stage, though I thought it was. So lost about 2.5 stone in weight, constantly thirsty. Would have bought every cans of Club Orange or Coke and just down them. That thirsty water wasn't doing nothing for me. So eventually went to my GP and he did a blood test on me, and he rang me about an hour after and nearly started crying down the phone and mentioned that, listen, you have type 1 diabetes. It's going to have a massive impact on your life and footballing career. So I just literally got onto the Dublin doctor then at that stage, and I was in Beaumont the following day to get the insulin sorted and to get up and running with the treatment for type 1 diabetes. But listen, I'm still able to play football now, still able to do a lot of things that, you know, other people have other illnesses and things that they can't do. So I'm just glad that I'm still able to do something that I still love to do.
Jeez, yeah, definitely. How you mentioned the technology, how that could have helped. Like, what way would it have, like, what way could you, for someone maybe that has something similar playing football now, like, what way can that help you now, and how can you kind of keep it going?
So I actually use a pump now, an insulin pump, so it's constantly dripping insulin into me. Back when I was playing with Dublin or finishing up with Dublin, it was an insulin pen, and you're going in and testing your blood sugars at half time and not fully understanding. Maybe I should have spent a lot more time maybe educating myself on what was required. But your sugars are meant to be between 4 and 8, and there was games I was going in 2012 when I was still playing with Dublin. Sugars could have been about 24, 25, and if that's that high, it just means the energy in your body isn't where it's meant to be. So it's in the blood and not in the muscles. So the technology I'm using now, listen, all the tests that I've done recently, they're sort of similar or just above what a normal person would be. So it means that your risk factors are lower than what they would have been maybe back when I was first diagnosed. But, you know, I never really took a time, and I know people say, you know, maybe men don't cry or talk about it. I never really sat down and said, you know, I have this, this is it. It's the worst thing in the world. I would just said, listen, I just have to get this ready. Likewise, you might have to get your food sorted, your boots ready. I just had to get something else ready before a game or training. But when I look back at it, and I have the little diaries and the books that I would have filled in, you know, the levels that I was dealing with during the game were nowhere near what they should have been. In relation to the blood sugar levels, and that was just literally just not being educated enough. And it was like I was 23 when I was diagnosed. There's kids that are diagnosed with it anywhere from 2 up to 15 or 16, and I'm just lucky that I was an adult and, you know, responsible for myself to deal with that. For any kid who's dealing with it, it's just you know, you have it. Unfortunately, that's it. You just have to take ownership of it and try to control as best as you can. My diabetes is different to someone else, and it's just trying to manage it, as I said, as best as I can, leading into to training and games. So
yeah, so then obviously, like, do you know, that obviously held you back as a footballer, and it came up to 2015 then, when you were dropped by Jim Gavin. You mentioned before that he met you in a hotel and told you that you know that you were dropped. I'm just wondering, like, what is a meeting like that like? Because it's obviously very disappointing for you. And it's something that he, I suppose, has to do.
Yeah, well, not has to do, and that I'd had a good relationship with Jim. Jim came in as an under-21 manager with us. I was playing with Kilmacud at the time. We were due to play Laois in a Leinster championship game, and he rang me up and said, listen, Kevin, you're starting midfield, Mark and John O'Loughlin. you could either be wearing number 8 or we'll give you number 27 and you're not going to be on the programme. But I leave that decision up to you. So he let me pick, you know, in a way that he was sort of, you know, just having the chat about it, you know, do you want to be on it? Or it didn't mean anything to me. The fact that I was playing was a massive thing. So I said, listen, put me as 27 and you know, come in under the radar. Luckily got the chance to play with John O'Loughlin in New York. But playing against him, a bull of a man, it was just that's the job that I was given. Jim would have been very meticulous and you would have seen it then following through to the senior team. Wouldn't have played much in 2013, 2014, got back into the team. Came on against Derry in a league game up in Celtic Park, did well in the second half, and then played the league semi-final and league final that year when we played Derry in the league final. So got back into a position where I was able to compete for a position leading into the first league game. We were due to play Laois. I think it was a week or two before, literally wasn't feeling great in one of the training games, so had a bit of an issue with the medication I was on, so that had to be adjusted. So I stepped out and I actually lost out in the starting position for that, but I started the next game against Wexford. So my last championship game at Dublin was against Wexford in the championship that year. After that then, it would have been I had a bulging disc in my lower back that was operated on at the end of 2014. So when I came back in 2015 for the league, it was just chasing shadows. Mm-hmm. Like, couldn't even get into a squad, let alone into a position where you're able to compete for a starting position. So as I said at the start, the competition for place was ramped up, and once you're 1 or 2% off, there's other lads there to take your place and take your position. That's what would have just happened. And meeting Jim then, he would have maybe made phone calls to other people. And listen, I met him in a hotel in around Liffey Valley, and he had the decency to explain to me there face to face, which was an honourable thing to happen. And I think that's maybe because of what I would have maybe played under him over the years previous to that he had the respect to meet me in person, which was a nice touch.
Yeah, definitely. Shows the type of man he is. These are actually quick fire questions. Yes. So who's going to win the All-Ireland?
Dublin.
Okay. Who would you prefer on your team in their peak, Conor McManus or Michael Murphy?
Sorry, Conor McManus.
Just remember where he's living.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Just the scores. Some of the scores he would have kicked. And I would have scored against Tyrone under the stand. Things like that.
Crazy,
things
he's able
to do. Yeah, yeah. No, listen, it's hard. How's the hard one? Yeah, just the sharpshooter.
I knew
scoring,
I'd put you on the spot.
Yeah.
And very last one. This might be even tougher. Where are the people friendly, or Monaghan or Dublin?
No comment.
I think that's a good way. I will be back with a little bit of hurling talk myself and Lee. I want to thank Kevin. Thanks a million for coming into us. I really enjoyed the chat today, and best luck with Carmarthen in the championship this
Super.
Year.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me, Lee, and thank you.
Lovely.
Welcome back to the show. We're going to round up the hurling. A crazy weekend of hurling, actually. And Niall, the dragon has been slayed. Limerick have fallen. Clare are victorious. What a game.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable game, Lee. Very entertaining stuff on Saturday night. And, you know, I don't know, maybe some people might have seen it coming a small, but I did check the odds that morning. Clare were 9-2. So, you know, not too many people were giving them a chance. But I suppose Limerick had disappointed last week against Waterford. So, and Clare were, you know, they were a wounded animal, having been very unlucky against Tipperary the week before. Mm-hmm. And so this was it for Clare, really. Like, they had to, if they lost, they wouldn't have been mathematically out of the Munster Championship, but they would have been very much up against it.
Yeah.
You know, and what bigger challenge can you get than Limerick in the Gaelic grounds?
Yeah.
And I suppose, like, Clare did, they started the game very well and Tony Kelly was on fire. But you did think when Nicky Quaid saved those two early goal chances that, you know, Limerick might have weathered the storm a small bit.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't. And Clare, I don't know, there was a defiance about them on Saturday night. And you could see it in Brian Lohan's interview and John Conlon's interview. It actually stood out for me. He talked about... They met up, obviously, the team meeting the night before, and they said, like, we're every bit as good as these lads, and, you know, we'll sow it into them. Not sure what the exact words he used, but you know, they're well, they were, they believed in themselves, yeah. And you could see that in their play, because many times in that game you kind of thought, geez, have Clare missed their chance now? But I suppose for the first time in a long time, Limerick, when they got the chance, they didn't really take them. And Tom Morrissey, of all lads, never hits a wide. He hit wides, yeah. And they dropped other shots into the keeper's hands. David Reid hit some poor wides. And, do you know, Clare, they kicked on. And for the last 5 minutes, just unbelievable. Unbelievable stuff from Clare, from Tony Kelly, Aaron Shanahan. I was delighted for that man, because so many times he's come on for Clare and he's caught balls and he just might hit the shot wide. And, you know, he's done the hard part and doesn't do the easy part. And this time, you know, he got the 2 points, and they were the two points that sealed it for them. So unbelievable scenes. And it was like, after the match, it was like they'd won a Munster final.
Yeah.
You know, but it was nearly as important for that. And I think everyone, anything to do with hurling, was, you know, it's nice to see it freshen up a bit.
No, of course, yeah. And like, we're absolutely taking nothing away from Clare, because they really brought the game and they were excellent all the way throughout. But you sort of touched on it there, Limerick wasteful. Do you know, I mean, will they be kicking themselves? Is this actually a game that Limerick, you know, let get away from themselves?
Well, like, it's just uncharacteristic from Limerick to miss those chances. We normally do, like, you just expect them to go, like, someone like Tom Morrissey, he just never misses of all their players. But, you know, there's kind of a few small little things, like whether it was Declan Hannan coming off against Waterford the week before, apparently that was a groin injury. He started this week, but wasn't as dominant as he'd usually be. Garrod Hegarty, I know he was sent off against Waterford, but like, he could have played against Clare and was dropped and came on and didn't have an impact on the game. Keane Lynch, his hamstring was at him again. That's an issue that's been bothering him for quite a while now, the hamstring, and he tweaked that. And Sean Finn looked to get a very serious injury in the build-up to a chance for Peter Duggan, who was actually a great save from Nicky Quaid. So, do you know, there's little things kind of showing up. And Clare just seemed to have a match for Limerick,
yeah.
in general. Like, Tony Kelly always has his best days out against Limerick. Clare, kind of, they're not, as Conlon said, like, he wasn't just saying that. They actually do. They push up on Limerick.
Yeah.
They mark them man-to-man. Like, Barry Nash is tracked. And, do you know, they're not afraid of them. And Shane O'Donnell as well really came into the game in the second half. So, like, it was an even game, and you just might have expected Limerick to, you know, put them away. But the longer the game wore on, it just felt like, you know, Clare, they had their measure.
Yeah, because even watching it, like, the Munster final last year, Clare was equally as good. The match was equally as crazy. But there's nearly scars there on baggage, like, because I felt it, you know, just because they were so brilliant last year and they still ended up losing at Limerick. They just would never go away. And then this time around, like, especially when Flanagan got the second goal, it just felt like, oh, typical Limerick, you know, they're going to get through again. But Clare never let their heads go down. They never were dispirited. Like, there was just a determination to not let it slip.
Yeah, like, I thought the game was over before that Flanagan goal, even, because Clare had gone 4 up, and then Flanagan gets this goal and you're just like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, there's a minute left in injury time. Clare are still going to have to defend this ball. And, you know, they did that. It was very clever from, I think it was Rory Hayes down by the side, and he flicked the ball through his legs when Limerick were coming, and they could have easily have given away a sideline that Limerick could have scored. But Clare were... Lohan said that in his interview as well, that, you know, they were calm. They weren't just fired up. They were calm as well. And, like, you would have thought that Limerick might, that, you know, it's happened before. And they came back into them in the group stage last year as well to draw. So, no, it was brilliant from Clare and brilliant for the championship.
No, definitely. I was just wondering as well, like, does it... I come across really negative now, but, like, does it take away from it at all that they're not actually out? You know, Limerick probably still going to go through. They're not being knocked out of the Munster Championship, maybe going to face them again. And, like, there's just that sort of feeling that to beat them, you need to be so perfect, so on the ball, and your performance levels need to be so ridiculously high. And realistically, they're going to have to do that all over again. You know, does that deflate it at all? Or is it a case of, you know, proof's in the pudding that we can beat them and they'll take that forward?
Yeah, I think that's the way every team will be looking at it. Clare they've fared better than anyone against Limerick last year, and obviously this year too. like the last meaningful championship match that Limerick have lost before Saturday night was against Kilkenny in the semi-final in 2019. Dear Tip won the All-Ireland. Tip beat Limerick in the round robin in 2020, but that game didn't mean anything because Limerick were already through to the Munster final. Mm-hmm. So, like, for the last 2 years, Limerick were, you know, basically unbeaten and unbeatable, and everyone was dispirited. And sure, we were only saying it here after the league final that this could be there, that they annihilate everyone. Like, yeah. So, you know, it does. It gives a bit of belief to all the them other counties, and definitely puts Limerick, it's, you know, they're in a place now where they haven't been for a while. So it makes the whole thing a lot more exciting now that, you know, there's probably Limerick, they're going to have to drag themselves out of this, and it's not going to be easy.
Yeah. Elsewhere, Waterford played Cork, but they didn't really show up.
No, they didn't. And I think coming into this one, you would have had your suspicions about Waterford that after running Limerick so close and it being such a tight game that, you know, they might struggle to rise it again. And that was they didn't rise a gallop, to be honest, because they were... Cork kind of got into a very early lead and they were flying it, and Darragh Fitzgibbon was scoring points and catching puck outs and he was cleaning up, and Waterford didn't really seem to have anyone on him, and Caelum Lyons was kind of seemed to be all over the place playing in different positions, and there just seemed to be a bit of a malfunction for Waterford and they never got going at all. And Cork, I suppose, they just got into, you know, they were on their home patch and they got onto a bit of a run and they were fairly impressive. Like, Fitzgibbon was very good. Declan Dalton, I thought, had a very good game and got one brilliant point in particular in the first half. But yeah, it was disappointing for Waterford because they're in a bad spot now, having lost two games in David Fitzgerald's comeback year. So
yeah.
Do you know, they're not out of it, but they're a long way to go if they're to stay in it. So disappointing for them. Yeah, they never got going. Hits the pass, the short passes that were probably working against Limerick were breaking down, and they were hitting. It's something that probably Waterford have done a lot is hit wides, and they hit some scandalous wides in the first half. Lads taking shots from everywhere. Just jumping to mind is Caelum Lyons hit a few bad ones, and Neil Montgomery hit a few, just terrible, terrible deflating wise when they needed points. And even though they were going to have a strong win in the second half, it was going to make no difference because Cork were so far ahead and they kind of had their dander up, and, you know, disappointing for Waterford. But Cork, they'll be happy enough, but they still, you know, they'll definitely face tougher challenges down the line. Tipperary next weekend.
Do you think there's anything to say that maybe you can prepare so much for Limerick and build towards them so much because they're obviously the team to beat, that then, you know, the game plan doesn't necessarily work for the next match and you don't have the same amount of time? Is there anything in that?
I'd say it's a mix of a mental and physical thing. Like, I'd say they were wore out after the Limerick game. Like, that was only, what, 6-7 days ago?
Yeah.
7 days before the Cork game. So yeah, they wore out physically, I'd say, definitely, because Limerick is such a physical test, and especially that match, that was very hard hitting.
Yeah.
And the mental thing as well, like, you know, they're like, we've done so well against Limerick, but we've still got nothing. And maybe they're thinking, you know, we'll be able to lift it again, but like, it's a hard thing to do, and they couldn't do it.
No, definitely. And there's a big game in Leinster as well. Galway, I think they were 6-6. They came back to snatch a draw against Kilkenny.
Yeah, it was. It's a big game. But at the same time, the Leinster Championship is just... I'll be accused of bias here, but it's definitely not as entertaining as the Munster Championship, because Galway and Kilkenny, even though they were playing each other, you'd expect the two of them, like, they will get to the... You'll expect them to get to the Leinster final anyway, because... Well, Wexford have already lost to Galway. So the real big game in Leinster is Dublin-Wexford, and that's coming up next. So, you know, you kind of expect Galway and Kilkenny that they'll be there in the final. It's kind of the fight for third place now that Wexford... Well, Antrim might have something to say about it, seeing as they got a point off Dublin. But... you'd expect that Dublin-Wexford game will decide who's in third place. So it's not as the Leinster Championship, there's not as many teams in contention, like, because Westmeath were well beaten by mm-hmm. Dublin at the weekend as well. But Galway, Kilkenny, yeah, it was... Kilkenny were 6 up with 15 with 20 minutes to go, so you're 5 up with 15 minutes to go, so you're thinking, do you know, Kilkenny will be able to close this out in Nolan Park. But Galway, they hung in there, to be fair. And the one thing about Galway, well, in fairness, Brian Kilcannon had a brilliant game. He got 1-5, and do you know, we had said last week that Galway didn't have the goal threat, but he brought the goal threat from going straight down the throat at Kilkenny and running at them. And he was rewarded 1-5, brilliant display. But the one thing about Galway is that they had a brilliant bench at the weekend. And the four subs they brought on all made big impacts in Fintan Burke, who's a lad many people would think would be starting, Jason Flynn, and then the two superstars, two young lads coming in. Liam Collins was the star of an All-Ireland minor winning team, and Declan McLaughlin is a fella from Portumna who's only 19, 20 years of age, on the under-20s last year. As Henry said in his post-match interview, he wasn't like this superstar underage, but he's a super, super hurler. And because I'm from right beside Portumna, would have went to school in Portumna, I'd know of Declan, and I'd have seen lots of him hurling for Portumna in the last few years, and, well, last year, and just an unbelievably skillful hurler. And when I heard him coming on after 68 minutes, I think it was, for his championship debut, I was like, if this lad gets a chance, he'll make something happen, because he might be slight and he looks skinny coming on, and you think it's only a small kind of a lad who's too young to come on.
Yeah.
But he's so skillful, and he showed great strength to beat the two Kilkenny boys for that ball. And then, as Henry was full of praise for him in his post-match interview, showed great, you know, bottle to take that shot on. Yeah. Last puck of the game, 1 point down on your championship debut in injury time, like, to take that on was phenomenal from him. And Liam Collins is similar sort of hurler to Declan, extremely skillful. He got a point as well. So these lads made a huge impact, and Kilkenny at the same time were hitting some terrible, terrible wides. They'll have nightmares about them. Hit wide after wide in the last 10 minutes, and that let Galway back into it. But I expect we'll see them clashing again soon. Yeah. So
it sort of lost a bit of flavour, but with the whole Henry Shefflin and Cody, do you know, like, that always was like an extra, just something about the game, do you know, when they were playing.
Definitely so did.
Leinster's lost out in that.
It added to it a small bit, I suppose, yeah. But look, you'd expect them to be in the Leinster final and it'd be good then, but there was probably a little bit of, do you know, not that they were holding back, but there was just, they had that sense that, you know, this isn't the most important game we'll play this year yet, like.
No, 100%.
Yeah, and we mentioned the Dublin well beat Westmeath fairly well, and Wexford, they look like they're in a sticky situation against Antrim, but they came out on top in the end by 4 points. So the two O'Connors, Rory and Jack, did the damage there. They got 12 from play between them. So, that keeps them. They needed that. They needed to win after losing to Galway last weekend. So it keeps it going.
Absolutely. Thanks to Niall for giving us the lay of the land in the world of hurling. I think it's worth mentioning that last week was actually our biggest show of the year so far, with Jimmy Clark in studio. We had David Clifford interview exclusive. And, you know, there's only more to come, really. It's going to get bigger and better, especially as we get into the depths of championship. So please like, subscribe, share, and we'll see you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.